The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to The Weekend Podcast. We are live on YouTube. Thanks for joining us. If you have joined us, if you haven't, thanks a lot. Tell your friends, by the way. If you know someone who's doing nothing right now, please tell them. Join us right live. We're doing this for a half an hour or so, I think, to chat in normal Weekend Podcast, but it's odd having a camera here. Pete and Steve, you all right, lads?
Yes.
Yeah, not bad.
Good.
Has anyone tuned in live? Are they going to turn the volume down on your thing?
Yeah, hit the mute button.
Okay,
this is very professional,
he's
isn't it?
He's an amateur. Pete is. Steve and I are professionals, of course. Yeah. Anyone watching live, Pete? So you can look at the stats.
Yes.
Look at the comments on YouTube. Anyone?
We've just hit 50 people watching
all
live.
All right, 50! So, tell your friends!
Yeah.
To be fair, we had 33 before we even started, so
that's good.
It's not bad, is it?
The sad thing is, they'll probably find the still screen more interesting than us when we come live. They'll probably switch off in 5 minutes. In fact, the still was a lot nicer, which Pete created last night.
It's good still.
Thanks very much.
And amongst us, we got a little bit of talent, because you were on the cameras, you were on the stills and stuff.
I'm not used to being this side of the camera, if I'm honest. It's a bit weird.
Well, oddly, even when you're the other side of the camera, he always dresses like that.
Yeah.
Well, you've got to look smart, haven't you?
He likes to keep the standard up, you know what I'm saying? So if you've not seen this before, we do chat about stocks and shares. We get round to it eventually on the Weekend Podcast. It's more chatting about our own stocks. But like I said, we have comments live right here on YouTube, so you can get involved. And I'm going to be covering a survey we did on Twitter. And there's a lot of stats bandied about trading and AIM. AIM, is a very high-risk area. But it's high reward potential as well. You can earn lots of money on AIM if you do well. I know lots of people on Twitter and all that have earned loads of money. But you can also lose a lot of money. And that's why I've done this, starting to do a series of videos. It's not so much to tell people how to do it, but it's just, what I've done and the lessons I've learned. Because everyone's got to find a strategy, and that's the thing. And I've always said this, international football teams, you can have 11 players on the field, all different styles, all world-class. So you've got to find your own style, and that's it. But that's what these lessons I do about videos are essentially, going through things that I've learned that helped me. Because when I started off, I didn't really have a guide or anything. But what I find is, and you probably find this as well, Steve, your biggest loss, right? What did you? And you still now? Are you into new world? Didn't you? Oil and gas?
Yeah. So it's a big loss. I don't actually want to say how much.
Don't say how much it was, but compared to the size of your account, you almost blew it up.
That was almost the end of my investing from the very beginning.
The start and the end.
Yeah.
But I said, don't worry, you can pull it back. And that's the difference. And I'm seeing on Twitter some of these comments from people. So I put a survey out saying, apparently 95% of people on AIM lose money. So I said, tell me, since the start of your investment career on AIM, how have you done? And I'm looking at it, and I think about sort of 60-40, I was looking, let me just find the survey, and by all means get involved in that. But there's a lot of good tweets, people coming back and replying to that. And look at this, is an excellent one from Sammy. For 5 years, I've averaged 10% a month, doing between 15 and 20 trades a month, and I've been selling every time a share value gains 10%. I've missed out of great long-term investments recently when I switched to making long-term investments, now sitting on a potential loss of over 30%. So that's the point. Investing and trading is two different things, and you've got to know what you are, an investor or a trader. I'm an investor, longer term, I hold, and you've got to have a strategy around that. But obviously, Sammy there was a trader, and he went.
Yes, he did better trading.
Yeah, he did better trading.
Right.
But the stats apparently for trading even worse. They reckon that there's a stat out there saying 90% of traders blow their account up in 90 days.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what Steve did.
One thing I was going to say, because I was reading some of those comments, is. And I think it's about patience, and not just in, like Warren Buffett says, patience with the stock, but actually patience while you're learning. I think that's really important, and not doing your nut on one stock.
But also, I think you've made a valid point. If you make massive amounts on the first couple of trades, you kind of get into a thing of that's the only way it's going to go. So I lost loads on my first couple of trades. It's actually made me.
That's exactly what I was going to say. There's a couple of guys saying that, and there's a lot of people on Twitter say, "Oh, you've got to protect the private investor," and a lot of people are ramping stocks and stuff. And do you know what? I genuinely think when you lose, you learn.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's shares are like that. It hits you in the pocket where it counts. And when that happens, you do start to learn. Otherwise, game over. There's some accounts people on Twitter here saying they've lost and that's been their biggest lesson because they've come back and persevered and they've become better. Some people just give up and walk away. Oh, someone make a valid point actually saying, that survey you got there, and I think the results, let me just look at the results. The results are 54% made money and 46% lost money. But some people says that's probably not accurate because people who've lost and given up will not be seeing that survey. And that's true.
Yes. So skewing the results.
Yeah. So here we are in the summer house. I've got to say a little before we get into stocks a bit more. Yeah. Over the road there, right, there's a lady.
Right.
She's 25. Now tell me if it's wrong or right. She's 25.
Right.
She's a smart looking lady, a blonde lady. I'm not judging her on her appearance, of course. But she looks smart, looks intelligent. And every day she gets changed at about 9 a.m. in her bedroom window.
Where's this going?
With a net curtain. Right.
You seem to know that.
No, with a net curtain. Yeah, yeah.
With a net curtain.
No.
I've met a net curtain. She's lovely. Yeah.
She doesn't get changed, net curtain.
Oh right.
She's behind a very flimsy net curtain. Mm. You can see pretty much everything.
Okay. Right? Why aren't we filming that?
Now I didn't know this for like weeks.
That's illegal, Pete, by the way.
Right.
I didn't talk much stalkers. There's another story coming up, but I didn't know this for weeks. Right, and. And then Megan and one of the kids said, oh, she's up there again. I said, who? So I looked out my window and I could see her. And she does a lot of exfoliating, takes a lot of time, a lot of cream applying. Okay. It's almost like she knows people are watching, you know?
Right.
And then Megan, my wife, says, I've got to tell her, because she's only 25 or something.
pull the curtain so we can see it clearly.
No, she said, I've got to tell her about this. I said, what are you talking about, tell her?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? She doesn't know. Is that bad? Why should we tell her?
Do you know, I sometimes do that, though. Sometimes you know... Sometimes you know the light is so bright outside, you know people can't see through your window. So you do a little naked walk over the landing.
Yeah, it's those lights that you set up in your room on you. That's what amplifies that. So okay, people will see that.
A silhouette.
But I'm thinking, the only people going to see it, because we're directly opposite here, are us. Right?
Brilliant.
No one else.
Yeah.
Should we tell her?
Is she a pretty
lady? She's very attractive.
So basically what you're saying is you and your boys, and by that I mean your sons, are up there every morning.
As
it were.
But I feel bad because she doesn't know. We're the only people watching it. I say the wife and the kids don't really care. But anyway.
Some comments going in. She knows now. Yeah, true. Good point.
Okay, cool. All right then. And also, talking about stalking, it's funny. After last week's podcast, I got an email saying, I want to join your WhatsApp group. Now, WhatsApp group is us and Paddy, pretty much. You know? That's it. And I said, no, it's not open to everyone. You know, it's just a WhatsApp group. Yeah, I want to join it. Mm. I also want to join you on Skype.
Is that Paddy
on the weekend.
There?
Yeah, that's Paddy there.
Right.
That's Pete the Pirate.
Be quiet.
Yeah, he's got a lot of skin in the game in the stock market. Right there.
I don't think they can see that.
Oh, behind is a skull. It's a pirate. Yeah. Mrs. bought that from Asda. It was 60 quid in Asda, right? She's a good bargain unto the missus. Mm-hmm. 60 quid in Asda, right?
Hence her husband.
during Halloween, right? And she said, I'll give you 15 quid. And the bloke went, go on then. she came home with that. So literally, she got to the shop to get some bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Came home with that. But it's got a sensor on it. So you walk past it, really loud, and shout stuff like, I'm going to kill you.
Right.
It's excellent for scaring kids away Halloween. We've seen little kids, approach 2 and 3 year olds, 4 year olds, with sweets and run off crying their eyes out. It's brilliant. So
you should put that up in your bedroom to counter the woman across the road.
She turns around.
Goes, whoa!
Skeleton looking at her. Skeleton pirate stalking me.
Yeah.
But anyway. I'll join the podcast. I said, well, listen, mate, I've known Pete, Steve and Paddy for, 15, 20 years. And that's why we sort of get on and it's quite relaxed, So, yeah, don't worry.
You kind of get on.
Speak for yourself.
I don't mind joining, he says. And literally, it is. But I sent that email out saying, listen, we're going live at 10 a.m. And he said, good to know you took my advice and let others participate in the weekend podcast. Don't worry. I'll be there to support you guys. So that's nice.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
He really wants to join in, which is quite a nice thing, I suppose. Anyway, so let me. Do you know what? A week on AIM is a long time. I know someone said a week in politics is a long time, but a week on AIM is a long time. Do you remember last week? We were quite bearish.
Mm.
And I was saying about the Brexit and about trade wars and all this stuff. And Steve said, it is a long time. I don't know if you want to reveal the figure, but there's been a marked difference just in a week in your portfolio.
Well, I think... I added
1%.
I think I did about 3%, but that's...
Do you want to mention the figure, how much the difference is?
No, not really.
Okay. But no,
not now he's given a percentage.
Yeah, I can say, I'm just in my portfolio.
It's a nice amount. In a week, you've gone from being bearish to... But do you know what the scary thing is now, right? I believe that economics, the macroeconomics, haven't changed. And it gets scarier.
In a week, no.
No, it doesn't. And the thing is, we are more bullish. That's not good for us. That's bad for us.
Yeah.
Because we're thinking now, this is going to be good now. So rolling into Christmas, rally time, all this. I genuinely think, honestly, we're heading towards recession 2020, even bit earlier than that. I just think the trade wars, China and Trump's lower level guys met up this week, didn't they? In Washington, chat about trade. Nothing came of that.
No.
Nothing happened. Nothing positive came of that. They've ramped up trade wars. It's going to get more expensive. And psychologically, it hits a lot of people. And people become, all it needs, you're only, you know, the mind, things you think of become true. Let me look at everything you're seeing here, right? A MacBook, all this stuff here was once in someone's mind. That's all. Now it's real. So when you say business confidence or investment confidence has gone down, that's real. People pull back on their investment. Everyone does a little bit of that, right? And the economy starts contracting. And I genuinely think we've had 9 years of a bull run, massive bull run. And another, you know, a little sign, the S&P share index, which tracks the 500 biggest public companies in America, hit a new record this week. And it's the longest bull run in history.
Yes.
Now, I believe in the pendulum effect. Like I said, I mentioned before, we've gone through one of the coldest winters of all, the beast from the east. You know, literally, our heating wasn't working because it was so cold. Now we've gone to one of the warmest summers of all. Look at the extremes there. We've had one of the biggest bull runs ever. What do you think is going to happen next?
Yeah, heating stops working again.
Yeah. I genuinely think we're in for a big bear run. I mean, most bear runs are over by 18 months, 2 years.
Yeah.
Bigger ones, a bit longer. But
do you want to explain what a bear run is for people who don't know that?
A bear market is the start of it is when it falls 20%, I think, from a size technical view. But I mean, recession is known as two quarters of contracting growth, so minus growth. So two quarters,
consecutively.
And that's a recession, yeah, consecutively. So obviously, stocks and shares fall. On the AIM markets, it's not so much affected by the macro environment in as much as you do get less liquidity. I mean, you do get that. I mean, all AIM shares are news-driven, you know, because they don't have a financial, they're pre-revenue and the small caps and risk. So they're driven by news more. But there is less liquidity, I find. So I think it will affect the junior markets. But I don't think it's a bad thing to always think in terms of, is a bear market coming? If I make this investment and I'm a mid to long-term holder, if you're a trader, it doesn't matter, of course, because it's shorter term. But if a bear market's coming, you think, you know, would I make this investment if I knew there was a recession or bear market coming? And if you value a stock, then thinking, yes, it's very cheap. I don't see how it can get any cheaper. And when I looked at that, for example, the first stock we mentioned, most of the stocks we mentioned on the podcast are stocks we own. So don't say we're ramping them, because do your own, you know, investment advice. Everyone invests at different levels.
Do your own research.
Research, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Do your own investment advice. But when I looked at Predator Oil and Gas, for example, that was 2.35 million market cap. That was the valuation of that. Always look at value and the value generation it can achieve. So they got 1.3 million in cash. Right, so take that off, right? That company is worth, what, 1 million. And they've got assets in the Irish Sea, which are absolutely ginormous. Like I said, the nearest gas field to them was Corrib, which Shell sold for. In fact, last week we said Shell sold it all. It didn't. They sold 45% of it for $1.2 billion.
Right, okay.
Right? The infrastructure is there to use on South Corrib, which Predator Oil and Gas own. And this company, they've also got another field, massive oil field, not far away as well. Ireland are looking at, you know, stocks going down in gas. The two primary oil fields are close into maturity, and they have Trinidad resources. And this company is valued at £1 million. Plus, you've got a guy there with huge experience in Paul, the CEO, and he owns 44% of the business. So I thought that is majorly undervalued. It's not valued at all. In fact, it's hardly valued. The listing and everything, you put everything together, it's not valued beyond cash. That's why I went in there. I'm going to go in there, but big time. So the upside reward is bigger than the risk. So when you're looking at a bear market coming, think. Always think of value. Think, you know, if you're investing in a company, look at the value and think, how cheap is this company? How cheap can it actually get? Even if we have a downturn in the stock market, how cheap can it get? You know, so I think always look at value in a stock. Always look at value. Some companies are very hard to value, but like tech stocks, they're very hard. But it's always worth trying to value them. Anything on the thing, Vic?
Yeah, lots of comments coming in. Thanks, everybody. A couple of really good examples here of opinion. Amit says, AIM is the playground of kings, followed up straight by Kev, who says, AIM is the playground of fools in general. So there you go.
Differing
opinions, yeah.
You can be both there.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, do you know what, Steve? Oddly, my first lesson I learned and I put on the video thing was about risk. And I said, what I mean by that is exposure to the stock market. Now, if you'd watched that video first and foremost, you know, and take it on board. But like I said, you need a lesson to learn anyway. Some people don't learn by other people's lessons. You have to have your own lessons. But that's why I put it as video number one. So for any newbie investors coming to the stock market, don't know how much to put into stock, that there's a very conservative 10% maximum of your entire portfolio worth. Just go 10% maximum. Because if it blows up, that's all you've lost is 10%. You know, if you want to go big time 100% in, you can lose 100%.
But so. if you're really just starting out, especially if you're going into AIM, I wouldn't even go anywhere near 10%. Like I.
Well, it depends how much you've got money. Not really,
because it's all relative, isn't it?
Yeah, but if you've got a grand,
yeah, well, yeah, okay.
I understand 10% is not a lot. It's £100, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but
Paddy also learned this, and I discovered this at first, because when you start putting in small amounts, I think anything under really £1,000 is quite, because the trading costs. It's
I don't want to make it exclusive to people with a lot of spare cash, because I think you can start investing on very little, especially on AIM, and do quite well.
Yeah, true, actually.
So I don't want to say you've got to have, you know, you've got to have at least 10 grand, you know, or whatever. I mean, that's a good question, actually. I mean, if you are on YouTube, if you want to respond, I mean, what would you say if someone's coming into investing and they said to you, how much do I need to start investing on AIM? How much have you started with? How much have you, I mean, because it's hard to put a figure on it. And of course, the more money you get, I mean, like, so I've done quite well in AIM, and 10% for me is enough now to put in a stop. My portfolio is enough exposure for me, and I can get decent return from that, you know? But like I said, when you start off, to make, you know, a material gain, a gain worth going for, you know, how much do you start off?
That's what I mean by learning, because and not being upset if you do well, and then if you've put a couple hundred quid in or something, and all you're ever going to lose then is a couple hundred quid. So hopefully that's not too bad.
Yeah.
And you kind of shouldn't be probably getting involved if you can't afford to lose that, perhaps.
That's the thought, that's the mindset you should have. Can I afford to lose this? How much,
yeah.
That's how I said in the video. How much are you prepared to lose? Don't think about how much you're prepared. Everyone goes into this thinking, how much am I going to make? I want to be rich, I'm a millionaire. Think, first and foremost, the first investment, if this goes wrong, how much am I prepared to lose here? Think that in your mind first, and you'll start investing sensibly, I think. I mean, always think that. How much of this am I prepared to lose? Am I prepared to lose 100% of this, or you know, whatever?
This is where you can get caught out, though, by, as I said, making quite a few wins on the first couple of trades.
Yeah.
Then you kind of just lose control a bit, don't you? You think that's how it just happens.
Yeah, when you start thinking, oh, this is easy.
Yeah.
Just pile it all in. I'll just remortgage the house.
Yeah.
Easy. Any answers, any replies?
A few others, sorry. Irimi, is that how you say your name? Guys, get your names on your laptops so you know, so the new members know who you are.
That wants to join.
Yeah, that's good. Bad, he or she, Irimi.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't
be offensive, Pete, yeah.
Okay. He, she also asked for a shout out. Say hello. Justin, you're a fan there, I think. Who's the good looking guy in the middle? No, sorry. What else have we got? Talk amongst yourself. Yeah, didn't know.
Okay, look for comments. I'll talk about something else. I think it's hugely important. I'm going to cover. So I'm up to lesson three, I think, because I've done I'm one or two in advance. I've recorded them, haven't released them. So lesson three, and that's value generation. I've talked about that. And simply, as I, you know, I'm not boasting when I said this, but I've had sort of 3 10 baggers or more. And what I look for, and people say, what you should look for, small caps. I mean, you're more likely to do better in market caps below 20 million. Like I said, this is the stats. These are the stats that I've looked at in the last two and a half years now. So I've done it this year as well. So 75% of the best 10, of the best performers, top 10 best performers last year were under 20 million market cap. That's a valuation before they rose. So they did several 100%. 50% of them were under 10 million. All of them, 100% of these gainers in the top 10 were under, have a guess how much market cap. So 10, 20, have a guess.
10.
Under what market cap? Under 10?
Yeah.
I just said 50%. Are you stupid or what?
I wasn't listening. I'm not listening.
10. That's a Steve answer, that is. Yeah.
Sorry, I was reading the comments.
So all of them, all of these companies are under a certain size, right?
Yeah.
The top 10 best performers of last year, all of them are under a certain percentage. So if you're looking at companies and you want to find the sweet spot, and like I said, do you know what? And I often say this, there's too many opportunities out there. There's too many companies to research. So this is why I did it. I want to narrow my sort of pool of research. And I want to make sure, if I'm going to narrow my field of research, I want to make sure I'm narrowing it to the potentially best rewarding stocks, you know, the best potentially stocks out there. Stocks the best potential, I'm trying to say. So I don't want to sort of narrow my focus to an area where I'm not going to get big hitters, you know? And I discovered that 100% of the best performing stocks last year were under 40 million market cap when they started their move.
Right.
So under 40 million.
Got it.
That's the magic number. If you want to do that, that's where you look. So, you know, people suggest stocks to me 100 million, and I say to them on Twitter, I say, Justin, have a look at this stock. And I say, that's too big for me. They say, well, have a look at it. I say, no, listen, I haven't got time to look at that. There's hundreds that the wife is waving. Why don't you come on camera, dear?
Paddy just texts as well.
But like I said, I haven't got time to look at companies. Do you know what? I generally restrict to below 10 million, 20 million, yes. But I haven't got time to look at companies above 40. There's too many of them. There's too many opportunities. You have to narrow your focus, hone in your focus there, and just look at those areas that you feel comfortable. You may feel comfortable in bigger stocks. You know, you may feel comfortable there, but you've got to narrow your focus, I think. I think it's very hard to play everything, you know, like big caps, small caps, mid caps, everything. And so that's why I like micro caps. So I say small caps, people don't know what that is. So that's why I put small caps on YouTube. But micro caps are where it's at, man. You know, they're hot and sexy and
Yeah. Okay, good. I'm reading a couple of the comments.
Go on then. I dare you.
out loud.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay, fine.
Can I say hello to Monty and Fred about my kids in Essex? We dropped them off with a stranger. And hi, guys. They love YouTube. This is why I'm doing it. I want to be there next
time. Trying to impress them.
Yeah.
A few different comments. I'd say at least 2K would be nice to start with. I start with 6K in two or three stocks. That's Martin. Profits grown as you expand to more stocks. Yeah. Mm. 2K is a good amount for a newbie who has no idea, split into two investments. I don't know.
If you want to potentially lose one of your investments. But do you know what? Like, I also say this. Even though I start with the rule number one, that's the thing. Your first investment you ever make is the riskiest ever. If you've got a limited amount of capital, everyone's got limited capital, of course. But I mean, if you've got a small amount of capital and you don't have a huge amount of resources, anything, that first investment is the most important of all. Because if you lose that, that's it, you're out of the game. So you take it carefully, because as you make money, you can afford to make a couple more mistakes, you know? But that first one is very, very important, I think. And like I said, I wouldn't go. If you had, for example, let's say you had a grand. Let's say you had a grand to start off with, right? Your friend of yours, Steve, says to you, by the way, Steve, thanks for sharing this, right? I asked Pete, he didn't share it very much. I saw your share on Facebook, and I thought, oh, that's good. He even got involved in the comments. And he said to one of his friends was interested, and Steve bigged me up. He said, listen, he's very knowable. And I found it quite ironic. He misspelled the word knowledgeable. He said he's very knowable.
That's unfortunate.
Knowable.
That's irony right there.
That's unfortunate.
Not misspelling the word knowledgeable.
Very knowable.
But Steve, I applaud you for getting involved.
Right. Just going back to the names on the computer and who's who. A couple of people think I'm Steve, so that's worrying.
Yeah.
I'm Pete.
I do.
Steve's the smart one.
That's Steve there.
Why are Pete and Steve interchangeable so much? They are, aren't they?
The names, yeah.
Even after knowing you for way too long, I still call you, Steve and you Pete.
Yeah. You get it wrong more than you get it right.
Confusing.
I know, yeah, it is hard. It's because they're really mundane, boring names, isn't it?
Paddy says, Steve looks different to how I'd managed he would.
And that's Paddy, who'd met him several times. Mm. I want to talk about milestones. You know what? And Paddy did a funny tweet this week, actually, I laughed out loud anyway.
Okay.
But in small cap stocks, we're talking about news, milestones. And I always look for this. After this series of videos, please subscribe to YouTube, by the way. I've got another series in mind, and this is my strategy I use, and it's an acronym CASH, and I'll go through what I look at. But one of those is milestones. And I think when you're investing in a stock, look for a significant milestone that has the potential to generate lots of value in that stock. And one of these, for example, is Europa Metals, the scoping study coming up. That's a significant, potentially, value generational milestone, because it will express or show the economics of that mine for the first time ever. Now, it's not been done before. This is a 6.5 million market cap. I believe that scoping study will come out and show it'll generate several hundred million dollars worth of revenue, free cash flow. So it's going to be potential. And what that sort of scoping study does, it de-risks the asset a bit more in the ground, the metal in the ground, because there's a bit more drilling going on, and therefore proves up the value. And you go through these milestones where it goes from scoping study, which is also called a pre-economic assessment, a P, as you know, which Asia Met did a while back, and I'll talk about that in a bit. And then they go to the feasibility, which phase two in Europa is feasibility. That de-risks even more. So it's almost like I did say, when you're going on a thing, exploration, this starts off, I've written this down actually, so I remember it. So generally, they go through these levels. Mineral resource companies go through these levels when they're mining. So they start off with number one, stage one. It's exploration, and that's, is it there? Is the metal there? Is the stuff in the ground? Is it there? That's exploration, they're drilling. Second, they define a resource. So basically, they know it's there. They're going to try and find out how big it is, the bit they want to dig out, how big it is. They may expand that, but they want to get to a minimum amount that's economically viable. So that's defining a resource. It could be a JORC resource or NI 43011. They're standard procedures or standard codes for these resources. So that's number two. The third one is the scoping study or the PEA. And that's, what could it be? That's what they're saying there. What could this be economically? The fourth one is a pre-feasibility study. What should it be? So it's a bit more accurate, a bit more detail. And then the fifth one, which Asia Met is getting to now, very soon, And then Marlison, they said it's going to be released very soon. It's a bankable feasibility study, or feasibility study. And that's what will it be? This is an exhaustive, definitive, look at everything from the economics to the environment, to the water, to what, it's not just economics, it's everything. How will it impact, how that mine will impact everything, what they're going to get from it. So it's the most accurate sort of measure economically of what that resource in the ground will do. And that's where Asia Met is now. Do you remember back when we first invested in Asia Met? They were just coming up to their PEA.
Yeah.
And I looked back at the chart of that, and we're talking about news, very important. When you get news come up, people know about it. It's very important. I looked at the chart, and everyone, in my head, and in fact, one of the guys, Mucka Gem, said to me, he said, yeah, that rose massively on the day, didn't it? I said, yeah, I thought it did. I went back and looked at the chart. It didn't rise massively on the day. It did, but it came back. I looked at it. A month before the PEA was released, the share price started going up. And then literally, it went up the day it went, whoosh, came back down. There's a massive spike on the day it was released. It was,
yes.
So,
but then it came back down.
Yeah, yeah.
Quite quickly.
So the rise was 2-3 weeks beforehand.
Yeah.
And Paddy said recently about United Oil and Gas, he said, it's gone up and it's come back a little bit. Why is it coming back? I said, listen, we're nowhere near the coal to drill yet. That's going to happen in Q4.
Yeah.
You watch. 2-3 weeks before that starts happening, it'll start gradually climbing towards it. And the interest will pick up and it'll start going. And then the actual, when the news comes, if it's amazing, it will go crazy, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
But the expectation of news, and you've got to remember this, is often better than the news itself, because a lot of it's based on hype, hope, potential, and that's in the imaginations of the investors who get carried away. They go to bed at night thinking this will go nuts. I'm going to chuck loads of money in this. This is going to go mad. And so people start really investing into it in that run-up. And that's where the aggressive... Yeah. And then when the actual news drops, it's not as exciting as you were expecting, because you were thinking of all kinds of exciting things in your head. And listen, nothing lives up to fantasy and dreams. Like, winning the jackpot, the lottery, right? The thoughts of you doing that is better than the actual reality. Most people win the lottery. People don't want to know this either. Are sadder after they win than before. They can't bother their friends because they always talk about money and to change their life. Most people. So the thoughts, your imagination is better than reality. That's what I'm saying.
I think the
stuff you think about in your bed at night is more exciting than reality, Pete. That's why you should stay single.
No, exactly. Well, CH says, can we invite the girl from across the road to the podcast?
Good
idea.
Do you know what? If we told her, I think she'd say, I know. Excuse me, do you know we can see you? Yes,
yeah.
I do.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
why I'd be surprised. Yeah. Anyway.
Should we have a siren when we hit 100 viewers? If so, 103 viewers.
All right. Yes. Thank you very much. By all means, subscribe. I'd intend to do a lot more YouTube stuff. I do like it. I still want my lessons.
No one else does.
No. Why I like it? Why I like doing it? Someone said, thanks for the videos. I said, I like
it. Was
it
your mum?
Not just, yeah. I haven't watched them, but they're very good, I expect, Justin, you said.
Yeah.
I don't know how to get on YouTube, but I imagine they're fantastic.
Very good. Well done.
But why I like them is because it's easy coming up with a plan or strategy. The hard bit is sticking to it, because when you start investing and trading, you just forget about the plan. But it underlines the reasons, the lessons I've learned, and it reminds them of me, of what I should be doing, why I stick to the plan, and why it sort of worked, So it's a good reminder.
2 points on that Asia Met story, though. And I think for new people, if you are, if Paddy is investing now and you see that kind of spike on that new, buy the hype, sell the news thing, but... If you look at Asia Met, and not all companies this size are going to be like that, because some will ultimately spike and then just fail and never be seen again. But if that story is good enough, the long-term potential is there. With Asia Met, we were buying it 1.5, 2p or whatever, spiked up to about 5p, I think, I remember. The temptation then, as it then comes down, is, oh, I've missed out, and people sell.
Yeah.
Well, now and it's then went on to get to 10, 12, 14p. So... That's the danger, isn't it, of like newbie investors actually going, I don't want to sell at there, and then it starts to go back down, and then you sell, actually you're missing a lot of potential upside.
I had an email from Alan.
Not always.
Well, Alan's a good investor. I'm not going to say his surname. He's a good investor. Email me. He said, Justin, in your videos, I think you should do a piece.
Is it Partridge?
A piece on patience, like you said, right? Because a lot of people are convinced that there's no quality AIM stocks out there. And I argue all the time. I say, listen, I honestly believe I'm in AIM quality stocks. There's a couple that don't think they're quality. But I aim to, invest in quality stocks that'll be mid to long-term holders. That's all I go for. And Asia Met's one example. I think there's many others. United Oil and Gas is out there. Upland Resources. These are proper companies with decent boards, experienced board of directors with skin in the game. And they've done it before. Predator Oil and Gas is another one. These are not guys who just... are corporate guys who take a wage and don't have any skin in the game. That's always a quality filter. You know, I always say this. I always question why a board don't have skin in the game, why they don't have shares in the company they own. If they're on the podcast or doing something, they're talking about why their company is amazing, you know, why it's going to make investors a lot of money, and they haven't got money in the game. I think, why? You're a corporate guy. You know, you like earning money. If you knew you could earn money by investing in your stock, why don't you? Full stop, why don't you? That's it. I just don't understand that. And they give all kinds of excuses. But let's be honest. If you knew you were going to make a lot of money and you are the CEO of a company, you knew that company was going to make a lot of money, you'd invest in your company, wouldn't you? You know? Full stop. And there's plenty of small business owners around the, up and down the country who put a lot of money into their own business, you know, and they believe in it, you know, like bike shops and hairdressers, whatever. And they do it, you know, plumbers. Well, they've invested loads into their own business. So why does a CEO of a company on a decent wage not put some money into the company if they believe it's going to make lots of money? So that's a red flag always. Mm. There are exceptions to the rule. There are exceptions to the rule. I mean, you know, sometimes there are. I mean, and also you should look at options as well. But genuinely, I think, you know, if you've got a compelling story then, mate, why not? You know, I've got a winning lottery ticket here. I'm going to give it away to other people. I don't want part of it. You know, it's really. But
as Martin says, what percentage of sub 10 million market caps are complete failures? Quite a few definitely need. Quite a few are. Definitely research is important.
Yeah, exactly, Martin. This is the thing. I was losing my thread there because I was going off on one.
You were. You...
But what I'm saying is there are quality companies on AIM. Now, I always say, price-wise, you know, you can buy a bad company at a good price and make money. You can buy a good company at a bad price and lose money. But the combination of buying a good company at a good price was a sustained rise. And like I said, that spike we had in Asia Met came back as it did. But now Asia Met, it's on at lows at the moment, and it's still way above where it was in that spike.
Yep.
So even after that spike had happened, it was trading at higher levels than it was previous to that spike. So it goes up, comes back, but people will take that. But patience, go back to patience. Yes, do your research on companies. Have patience, because spikes do come back normally. If they don't, there's no point chasing it. That's why most people fail on AIM, because they chase the price. It's all about the price, you know? Yeah. If you buy the wrong price, that's it. So you've got to get the right price. And that's why you've got to do research. And when a company spikes, I do look into a company that spikes. Say, why is it spiked? There's a reason why. Is it just fluff, you know, hot air and hype from investors, or is there substance behind it? And then if you look into that, you've got plenty of time. It will come back, because people, even the people multi-bagged on that spike, they don't want to lose that money. So they'll sell, and they'll bring the price down. The price will come back down. That's your time to research. Put it in your watch list, do some research, look into the company, see if you like it. And I said before, when I'm looking for 10 baggers, I genuinely say, does the assets this company have, do they have the potential to generate 10 times the amount of value of the current valuation of the company? Ask yourself, because there's plenty of small caps out there. I know people pushing small caps all day long on Twitter, and I'm looking at them thinking, that does not have 10 bag potential. What I'm saying is, I'm not saying the companies will get the 10 bag, but hopefully they'll do a couple of bags and they'll have a bit left, at least, you know? So when you're looking at the company, always think, does this have the potential? And I don't want to slag one company off, and I'm just going to mention VRS, Vesarion. Yes, it's now 200 million market cap. You know, this is a company that produces, it's got graphene, and signed loads of collaborations with massive companies around the world. A lot of people have criticized the market cap, the valuation of this company. It's very high. It's 250 compared to, if you're valuing it on traditional metrics. I mean, 9 million was the revenue last year. They valued it 250 million or something or close to that. And it's still rising. But they're signing massive deals every year. Now, this is a blue sky stock with tech, because nobody knows the potential of graphene. As far as we're aware, it can touch every sector, every industry, you know, positively. It can have a benefit. We won't have to pay for it as consumers, you know. It'll just be put in by these big companies and it'll improve their bottom lines. So it can affect so many, you know, from smartphones to batteries, to homes, to planes, to cars. You know, it can affect every industry, tires, everything. And so, you know, no one knows the potential of graphene. That's why VRS, Vesarion, is flying like this, because nobody knows the benefit it'll create. It could be massive. They've done deals with countries, China. They've done deals with Fortune 500 companies, you know. And so I don't know where it goes. Yes, if you value it on traditional metrics, it's overvalued. But we don't know the potential of graphene. That's it. And when you can't value it, it'll go nuts. I did compare this to EVRH. I think EVRH, of course, we didn't know the potential of VR, music VR. But I think that's a smaller niche. I think it's a lot smaller market, you know. Anything else, Peter?
Someone says Andalas, Justin? Yeah.
Andalas was, again, you know, I've been in small cap stocks for 3 years. Andalas was a big mistake. Yeah. And I was sold by the CEO, who was a salesman, a very good salesman. I was sold on it. And you know, and like I said, in 3 years, people said to me, even on Twitter, my survey, a couple of people said they've learned so much in the last couple of months, and you can do. I've learned. I've been investing for over 20 years. I was in the dot-com boom. I made and lost money then. I gravitated towards bigger stocks, but I always dabbled in the small cap space. But in the last 3 years, because I've been doing the podcast, I've essentially just focused on small caps. And I used to work in William Hill, right, as a manager in William Hill. And I spent days, months, weeks, years trying to find a system to make it work. Couldn't make it work.
No.
Couldn't. And I realized the odds are stacked against you.
Yeah.
I do this on AIM. I love trying to find a system. I love it. And I'm doing this. This is what I'm doing right now, trying to find a system that I work. That's why I looked at the best. So if you want to find a stock, right? If you want to make money on stock markets, what do you do? My thought was, right, look at the best performers, see if they got any characteristics, any traits. And they did. It was their size. Hmm. Then you look into other things, and there's a couple other traits that happen as well. They're in tech, they're in biotech or pharma, or they're in resource companies. Their board of directors have skin in the game, they're experienced guys. There's lots of things that these companies have in common. So look at the best performers and work down from there. And that's what I'm trying to do, find a system, not to waste my time, be the most efficient investor of small caps. And that's what I'm doing. These lessons I've learned are a system, basically, that I try and stick to. I don't now and again, I don't. But
now, here's a comment, having a little dig. Vesarin at 250 million market cap is too big for you, remember, Justin? But we weren't investing when it was 250 million.
I was investing at sub 20 million.
Yeah. And then the question really is, when, because I was looking at that this week, and it's had a nice little rise on yet more news. And it is big now, isn't it? On a pre-revenue company. Yeah, when is it too big, and when do you kind of take top slice? When do you need to take profit?
Well, I genuinely think that's a blue sky. I have top slice about 4 or 5 times in that. Yeah. I've literally, there's nothing in that now. If it goes through, if anything goes wrong, it will not affect my portfolio massively. But, I want to hold it, because it could get the stage where it'll become a billion-pound company and pay a dividend. I don't mind that.
Was that the one that did 300% in that 1 month?
Yeah, I think so. Vitarian, one of the top 10 performers in the last 6 months. So it's a fantastic performer. But I'm looking at stocks. I sliced too quickly in Vitarian as well. So
yeah, I did.
I mean, I just.
Well, but that's hindsight, isn't
it? Yeah. And now, even with Asia Met, I sliced too quickly. I just think I should have had a lot more skin in the game there. Even now, I still owe Asia Met. But like I said, I use that. Like someone said
to
me.
Not as bad as your dad.
Yeah, my dad just looks at his portfolio and just presses the sell button for some reason because he doesn't like the look of it. That's down. I'll sell that. But
that's down today.
Yeah, that's okay.
I'll sell the whole lot.
Didn't he buy on a high day and sell on a low day?
Yeah.
Oh, Steve's criticising there.
Yeah.
Well, I used to do that, but not anymore.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, but do you know what I was going to say? But the thing is to get into small caps and try and hold as long as possible. But de-risk as you go. And if the story hasn't changed, if it's still potential, still go with it. I missed out earlier on. I was going to say about Paddy. It was quite funny. We're talking about milestones and news. Now the news about and I've got a load of milestones here that I've written down. I posted on Twitter. So I said first and foremost, these are in timeline of stocks I hold with milestones. Write them down. It's worth knowing about because you will see the share price rise. A significant milestone.
Write these down.
No, the ones you hold.
Oh, I see. Right.
Yeah, on your own stocks. Write them out.
Got it.
So my stock milestones are Asia Met, bankable feasibility study. Nearing completion. They didn't give a date there, so I assume that's very close. In September, you got Europe Metals scoping study at Talao, well spud and request response from the government. Upland Resources, a Wick spud. September as well, I3 Energy, farm out. October, Horizontal Minerals feasibility study. Predator Oil and Gas, Trinidad exploration, possibly the Frontier exploration license update in Ireland, and maybe something going on there with farming, and also United Oil and Gas, coal to spud. Those are the milestones I know of, and that's always worth having in the background, thinking we're heading towards these potentially value-generative milestones, that could happen. So it's always worth having. What I thought was quite funny this week, that we are all waiting for news from Europe Metals. I say we, shareholders.
We all are.
Because Lawrence did say on the podcast there would be news that was due out last week. In fact, the week just gone, the week before.
Yeah.
It's not due out. But apparently it's still happening. It's going to be news out. This is before the scoping study. And everyone kept saying, when's the news come out? What? Drop the news. Release the news. I want the news. Start of the week. And I was saying, hang on. And I noticed your volume ticking up, right, on this expectation of news. But I thought, I don't want the news to come out. This rise, and we saw was it 12% on? What was it? No, it went up 12%. But it came back 9%, I think, on Friday. Was it? 6.8% it was up. But I mean, it's done. What? It's 0.117 now. We were investing this at 0.06. So it's I'm about 70-80%. What are you? 70% up in this?
No, a bit less than that.
But
50%.
I don't want the news to be released. The people you know, the, like I said, the curiosity and the imagination driven by that news company, yeah, is more powerful than the news itself. I just want the news to hold off a little bit. It's fine.
Okay.
But I do generally think a lot of companies, like, generally, we have to, you know, when companies come on the podcast and us come on, it's normally the morning of the news, you know, and sometimes it gets too busy. We can't have too many companies on. But this week's been hard work. This week, I think companies are, if they can, holding off until the end of August is gone, because we all know
everyone's
August,
on holiday.
Yeah, yeah, everyone's on holiday. People come back sort of next week or week after properly. Yeah. So I just genuinely think they realise releasing news into this market isn't that good. But I think it's been a little bit boring the last couple of Fridays. But
this week generally I thought was pretty good. There was some.
Yeah, no, but the news.
Nice.
Going back to Paddy's gag. Sorry.
Third time.
I built it up now. It's not going to be any good, is it?
Yeah, no.
But Lawrence, who's the director of Europa, posted on Vox a picture of a tractor. And the share price went up in 2 days, double digits, 2 days in a row. And Paddy said, is that all we needed? Yeah. Was a picture of a tractor.
Yep, that's it.
I know. And the share price went mad.
Mm. Was there nothing else around that?
No.
Here's a tractor.
He posted, he posted something else yesterday of the drill pad where they make a pad for a drill, so it's all nice, you know. All it was a flat bit of mud.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking,
people are getting excited.
No, I thought, I bet he's fun at parties. Oh,
yeah, let me show you my snaps. But you've gone from a tractor to a square bit of mud. And I think the tractor topped the mud, to be honest.
Okay, was it? All right, better.
It was an old tractor.
You should do a Twitter poll on that. Which do you prefer, the tractor or the mud?
But I do think there'd be news coming through on that. But anything else going on there? What's happening?
One from a user I think I recognise. BT? Question mark. I think might be the wife.
Yeah, BT was an experiment. We wanted to, like I said, and also I don't know if maybe we'll carry on the experiment. But like I said, for a while I've understood that the small caps is where it's at. If you want to make decent money, you know. But I've always wanted to think, right, okay, let's have a go at big caps. You still have a dabble on them, and that's why we started this experiment, trying to achieve 10% off each big stock, rolling it over to the next one. And going from, I've even forgotten the parameters. We're going from
1 to 50.
Going from.
It was so long ago.
No, 1,000 to 100,000, wasn't it?
Yeah.
1,000 in
50 trades.
50 trades or less.
Oh, okay, yeah. So we've done three trades. This is our third trade, BT. It's scuppered the old thing.
Yeah, it's been going on about 10 years now.
Yeah. The first two were quite good. Sky and EasyJet did very well.
Got 10%.
21% in Sky.
Rolled it in, yeah.
Sky was on takeover bid, did 21%. That's for a big stock, a multi billion pound stock. That's a big move, 21%.
Yeah.
And. Yeah, and it came to BT, and literally, it's looking good in the chart at the moment.
That is the wife that's asking that question.
Yeah, it's probably the wife here, in the garden.
Who you're going to pay back because you've lost some of her money.
Yeah, I want to say about United Oil and Gas, it's getting some traction. You know, Brian Larkin?
Yep.
If you don't know about this stock, I think it's worth looking into because it's at, around about 15 million market cap. Always look at the valuation of stuff. People look at share prices. Always look at the valuation of a company. And if you look at the options they have, they came to the market just over a year ago with one license, one oil and gas license. They've now got nine, right? And the only thing that's constraining Brian, like I said, he's just warming up. He said in the recent podcast, so just warming up. They're valued under 15 million. Now, even Coulter is worth, which is the drill coming up, even that's worth pretty much close to the valuation of the company on its own, right? They got eight other options, of which is Jamaica, which is phenomenally big. It's like a major would love to have a slice of Jamaica, and it's with Tullow. But I think if Coulter comes in, and it's an appraisal well, it's not highly risky, if Coulter comes in, right, you watch the deals Brian will do then.
Yeah.
They'll get cash from Italy because they've got production coming there in 2019. They'll have cash coming in from Coulter. You watch the deal flow there.
Mm.
I think it'll pick. Already it's been described as a mini major. But if you think.
Do your own research, obviously.
Yeah, if you think Brian's acquisitive now and acquiring lots of companies now, you wait till he's got cash flow coming in. I just think it'll be a blockbuster here.
Mm.
Right, we should. Any comments? We better wrap this down. We are going paintballing later. In a bit.
Yeah. We're hovering around the 100 viewers, you know. I think it peaked at 109.
It's not Jake Paul or Logan Paul standard or the Dobry brothers, I know.
Did you see they're having a boxing match?
Yeah.
I'm thinking maybe. Oh, we've got the referee here, right? He's ready.
I'm thinking Steve against the missus.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, wouldn't take that battle.
That'd be 1,000 views for that. And the girl across the road.
Yeah, yeah.
She can be the ring girl.
And we're all dressed in net curtains.
Yeah, that's it. Good.
One thing I mentioned, I'm not going to say this, but I suggest I floated this idea to a couple of people on Twitter. I said, European Metals now, it's had a lot of flack. A lot of people say, no, oh, I wouldn't get involved in that company because people didn't like Colin Bird, who's done very well for himself. And I know he's come to the small cap companies, shareholders been burned. But, you know, he's done a massive deal. The one stock he did, I mean, he's quite highly regarded in the industry. But there's another company I mentioned before, Bazant Resources, and I'm not, that's my
oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah. I don't want to catch that.
No.
Yeah.
Bazant, right? I said, they're involved in that as well. You know, Lawrence and Colin involved in Bazant. And I wrote a blog on Bazant. And Colin's got an investment company. And he's invested in 21 mineral resource companies. And the biggest holding he has is in Bazant, right? BZT.
Yeah.
And when I say look for a company that has the potential to generate 10 times the valuation of its current value. You can look at Bazant, they did a scoping study, so they're ahead of Europa, really, but they're revisiting. They're doing pretty much the same what they're doing at Europa. They're revisiting it, going through and back into a scoping study and remodeling it and all that stuff. So they're redoing it. But
In a more risky jurisdiction.
Yeah, it's in the Philippines, but it's in copper as well. So that's that's a hot commod, you know?
A hot commod?
Yeah.
Not a hot commode.
No, it's a hot commod.
No, don't get those mixed up.
Now, the market cap is about 4 million. It's valued at 4 million, right? Of course, it's risky. And when you're playing with risk, I always say this, you know, you can't control the share price of a company, you can't control the market. All you can control is your exposure to that company. So if you want a, you know, a slice of action, but you don't want to take on too much risk, put a tiny amount in. You know, if it starts going well and you start, because I find when I've got a bit of skin in the game, I start reading the RNSs more. If I keep trying to keep watching a company and I haven't got any money in it and I've got other companies, they take priority, you know? So I generally put a little bit in a company. And then I think, listen, this is highly risky, not investment advice. But the NPV on this is that net present value of this, right? That means look at the mine, all that, take all the costs out. This is worth 793 million. That's the copper and gold.
Yeah.
This is a market cap of just under 4 million. That's 172 times the value of the company, the asset in Philippines. Now, the Philippines is a risky area, but if copper crunch happens and people go nuts about copper, there'll be majors looking at this, because there was a major looking at it in 2014 when the copper price was going down, and they were going to pay 70 million for it.
So when you say there's risk in the Philippines, what could potentially go wrong there?
Well, the president Duterte, has been down, and his environmental minister, they've been down on, for a long time. I think the industry's been taking the mick environmentally. They've been getting away with it and not paying much attention to the laws of the land environmentally, you know? And they've clamped down on open pit mining that are spoiling the countryside and all this stuff. They really clamped down on it. But it's still happening. Mining's still going on. But now I think they are, you know, I think all of these, you just pulled them into line, you know. But this is not an open pit mine. Open pit goes from the surface down, destroys pretty much the environment, you know. So that's why mines, you know, you've got to be in a jurisdiction. If you're creating a mine, like I said, Europa Metals, they're in a mining jurisdiction. There's been mines around there. There's all infrastructure geared towards mines. You're not going to put a mine in a place of beauty, a scene of beauty. You know, it's not going to happen. It won't be allowed. It won't get permitting. But so you've got to look at that. But like I said, he was down at open pit mining. This is an underground mine, so it won't spoil pretty much the surface of the thing. But again, it's high risk. But the potential is massive, massive. Like I said, 70 million was bid on this from Goldfields in 2014, and that's before the government's banned, you know, the diesel and petrol and that stuff, and then before we're all going to electric vehicles. So when copper does take off, that asset's price will go up generally, because it's got lots of copper in the ground there. And so that's what I'm looking at. So even if they do nothing to it and the copper price goes bananas, that the value of that asset will increase, you know. So that's what I'm just saying. It's highly risk, but you know, worth looking at, I think, because it's just a tiny market cap. But so that's not investment advice. Don't look at it, you get burned. Like, I don't want to say, but some people say you give investment. I don't give investment advice. It's a high risk stock. Do you hold any of that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you, Steve?
I do.
All right, good.
Would you, if you lost your money there now, would it bother you?
I've not got a massive amount in there, so no.
That's the way to play. And then if it starts getting better, starts de-risking it, then maybe go a bit more, you know? But it's one of the things that just keep an eye on it. I mean, I think it's worth looking at because copper. I'm always looking out for copper, a decent copper. Asia Met's there, of course.
Yeah.
But
yeah, look out for the coppers.
Yeah, yeah. Always be aware of the coppers. Mm. Anyway, that's it. We've got to do some paintballing.
Right. Was there any, looking forward any to that.
Yeah, yeah. As I said, if you just tuned in, we are in the summer house, and that's Pirate Pete. There's the kids' summer house here, so this is not where I live. Even though Megan and the kids did sleep here the other night.
Did you not stay in here?
No. I'm a grown man.
You were with the girl over the road.
It's
the only opportunity I have. It's the first thing. And then they came back in half two in the morning, scared. Okay. What, we're 50 yards from the house.
Pete the Pirate.
Yeah, I don't know. There we are.
Right.
Marvel stuff. So have a nice weekend, everyone.
Yes.
By all means, subscribe to the YouTube channel. We may do more of these.
Yeah.
The guys.
Thanks for watching.
Again. Yeah. Thank you very much for watching. Taking the time out, and you can also hear the audio on the podcast we release later, hopefully. And but the most important thing about any investing is subscribe to the channel.
Final plug.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Subscribe now.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.